May it please the court, Casey Granis representing Jeffrey Saunders on appeal. I'll reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
I apologize for mispronouncing the name.
That's quite all right, Your Honor. It was misspelled in the caption. Mr. Saunders was tried with Mr. Davis, and Mr. Saunders was acquitted of the assault charges and the unlawful possession of a firearm charge, but found guilty on the kidnapping charges. The issue here is whether the to convict instruction for the kidnapping offense omits elements of the crime such that reversal of the kidnapping convictions is required. The answer is yes, the conviction should be reversed because the to convict instruction in this case did omit essential elements of the kidnapping offense, including the element that Mr. Saunders know that what he was doing, that the abduction was unlawful, that the restraint was unlawful. So the focus here that I've done in the brief and I'll do today is the focus is on the mens rea component of knowing that the restraint was without legal authority.
The jury was instructed that the state had to prove that issue, weren't they?
No, they weren't. The jury was instructed that in the two convict instructions, the jury was instructed that the state had to prove an intentional abduction.
Right.
But
the jury was given a definition of the term instruction and
abduction.
I mean the term abduction.
Yes, they were.
It means that they had to find that they knowingly restrained, and then there was a definition of restrained, was
there
not?
There was a definition of abduction.
It included without lawful authority.
And there was a definition of restraint. But
the jury had to. Unless the jury sort of ignored that definition, in order to find abduct, they had to find the defendant knowingly restrained the Valdezes.
Well, knowingly restrained, yes. But the issue is whether anywhere in those instructions, including the to convict instruction, or that the jury was told that in order to convict for kidnapping, that the state had to prove that Mr. Saunders knowingly acted without legal authority.
Well, I guess the question is, since the jury was instructed that they had to make this finding, the question is, is it necessary that term be in the to convict instruction?
Yes, it is. But before I turn to that momentarily, I do want to point out also that in the instructions that were given, the jury was expressly told when it was instructed on the definition of knowledge, I believe, that the jury did not need to find that Mr. Saunders knew he was acting without lawful authority. So whatever the other instruction said, the jury was expressly told that what I'm arguing is an essential element of the crime. The instructions that were given contradict that. So we then return to, well, essential element of the crime of kidnapping is knowledge that the abduction, that the restraint is without legal authority. Is that an essential element? The Court of Appeals decision in Moorfield provides a key, as does our decades worth of case law and recognition that unlawful imprisonment, which is also a restraint-based crime, is a lesser-included offense of kidnapping. Now, Moorfield, as we know, is significant. That's an unlawful imprisonment case, and the Court of Appeals recognized that a statutory element of the crime of unlawful imprisonment, again, that's a knowing restraint, is that the defendant have knowledge that the restraint was without legal authority.
But the court didn't find that it was an essential element, did it? It just said that the state had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the restraint was without legal authority. Right? And in that case, the evidence was insufficient to establish that.
The court in Moorfield found that knowledge of that it was without legal authority was a statutory element of the crime. And you're right, Your Honor, it did reverse for insufficient evidence. So then it comes down to, okay, what's an essential element of the crime? The case law is very clear on this. What constitutes an essential element? It's a fact without which a conviction cannot be sustained. And therefore, it necessarily follows that knowledge of the law in an unlawful imprisonment context is an essential element of the crime.
How do you compare that with a state, I think, Lorenz, State v. Lorenz, where the court looked at the term sexual contact which is defined as meaning a contact for purposes of sexual gratification. That's a definition, and the court held in Lorenz that it was an essential element that had to be in the that had to be in the to convict instruction. I mean, isn't this more akin to that case than anything that was said in Warfield?
Well, without the benefit of the state citing Lorenz, I admit I'm at a bit of disadvantage here in comparing.
It's 152 Washington 2nd 22, and I don't believe either side cited the case.
Yes. But I believe I grasp what Your Honor is getting at. This, there's a distinction that Lorenz draws between definitions of an element versus an element of a crime. But then we go back to Warfield. And I would, well, before I go back to Warfield, I'll just point out that what constitutes the distinction between definition and an essential element seems to me that it should turn on the definition of what an essential element is. And if it doesn't qualify as that, then it's not, shouldn't it be a definition? Now,
what's your definition of an essential element?
Again, it's a fact without which a conviction cannot be sustained.
What statutory definition in the criminal code wouldn't meet that test? Why don't all definitions come into play then? Aren't all definitions under your standard elements of the crime then?
There's a distinction between definitions of words versus, how can I put it? There's a distinction between the definition of a term that comprises an essential element versus the essential element itself. Now, in a given case, it can be difficult to discern the difference between the two. But when we look to Warfield, and it's plainly saying that the knowledge of the law is a statutory element, I believe that gets us there. And I also point out that this court's recent decision in State v. J.C. Johnson recognizes that is an essential element of the crime of unlawful imprisonment. It flat out holds that. That supports Mr. Saunders' argument here. Thank you.
You have your rebuttal time.
May it please the court, again for the record, I'm Kathleen Weber, representing the state of Washington. The question before this court has to do with whether or not the two convict instruction for kidnapping was adequate. The rule is that a constitutionally adequate to convict instruction must contain all the essential elements of the crime. But the reason for the rule is to prevent the court from providing jurors contradictory instructions. So, for example, in State versus Emanuel, which I'm sorry neither party cited, the court was faced with an instruction that said to the jurors, in order to find the defendant guilty, you have to find A, B, C, and D. And then there was a second instruction that said, in order to find the defendant guilty, you had to find you had to find E. And so you had this contradiction about, well, what is it that we actually have to find in order to find the defendant guilty of this charge? In this particular case, the instruction that was given to the jurors followed the statutory language. And State versus Fisher says that's good enough. There's two elements, really, to kidnapping in the second degree. There's the mens rea, which is intent, and there's the actus reus, which is abduct another person. Here, the jury was instructed that the elements of the offense are intent and abduct another person. Now, Fisher says to us that we don't have to include all of the definitions of these elements in the to convict instruction.
Is that the case in all situations without exception?
Yes, I think it is. I think that there are cases, for example, where the WIPIC committee has clarified the instruction for unlawful imprisonment to include the definition of restraint as part of the to convict instruction. But a constitutionally adequate jury instruction for unlawful that charge could have read to convict the defendant of the crime of unlawful imprisonment, the jury must find that the defendant knowingly restrained another person, and then separately defined the term knowingly and separately defined the term restrained. Now, the cases cited by the defense don't really have a whole lot of application in this case, in part because Warfield was a sufficiency of the evidence case. It was a bench trial. There was no issue with respect to whether or not there were adequate jury instructions. In fact, in a footnote, the court says specifically, this raises a question, our decision here that knowingly modifies all four components of restraint raises the question as to whether or not one of the WIPICs is adequate, but that's not before us today. And so they really didn't make any decision with respect to whether or not the jury instructions for unlawful imprisonment were adequate in that case. Johnson is also...
So your position is that the WIPIC's inclusion of without lawful authority, et cetera, in the instruction is not necessary.
It's not necessary, but it is helpful to clarify it. And, you know, the WIPIC committee does make modifications.
And so your position would be here that with regard to kidnapping, it's not necessary, but again, it would simply help clarify if it was possible
without making it too muddy.
I see.
You know, instructions are adequate if they don't relieve the state of its burden of proof. And that, again, folds into the whole rule that you don't want to have contradictory instructions to jurors. Here, the state was required to prove, and, you know, I'm in a little bit of a loss why defense is arguing that we have to prove knowing a restraint, because the statutory element is intent. And the fact that we also instructed the jury on knowledge has no impact on relieving the state of its burden of proof. It did not relieve the state of its burden of proof for a couple of reasons. Number one, the jury was never instructed that it had to find that the defendant knew anything with respect to the kidnapping instruction. The mental state was intent, and that was separately defined. Second, the knowledge instruction related to the unlawful possession of firearms charge of which the defendant was acquitted. It didn't relate to the kidnapping charge. But third, the knowledge instruction, even if read in conjunction with the kidnapping instruction, said you prove knowledge if you prove intent, but it did not tell the jurors that you prove intent if you also prove knowledge. And so the jurors had to actually find that the defendant intentionally acted without lawful authority. When you read the three definitions or the three definitions in conjunction with the two convict instruction, the jurors were adequately informed that in order to find the defendant guilty of kidnapping in the second degree, they had to find abduct another person. Abduct was defined as restraint with unlawful force, and restraint was defined as, the four components of restraint, restricting another person's movements without consent, without legal authority, in a manner that interferes substantially with that person's liberty. And so here the jury was actually adequately instructed on the elements of kidnapping in the second degree. I would ask that the court find that this instruction was constitutionally adequate, the state was not relieved of its burden of proof, and uphold the convictions in this case. Thank you.
Just to return to this business of essential element of the crime versus definition of a term, definition of an element, I would like to return briefly to State v. Johnson, which I alluded to at the end there. Again, which held that knowledge of the law, knowledge that one was acting without legal authority, was an essential element of the crime of unlawful imprisonment, again, a restraint-based crime. And if I'm not mistaken, Judge Cox authored that opinion. I would ask this court not to lose the forest for the trees here. This case is about burden of proof and whether the state was held to it.
Does context matter? I mean, does it, Johnson was in the context of what needed to be included in the information in order to give the defendant notice of what he has to defend against.
Mm-hmm.
Versus here, we're not talking about the information. We're talking about jury instructions, where the question is, do those instructions accurately state the law, allow the parties to argue their theories of the case, and does the instruction relieve the state of proving of its burden of proving every element of the crime? Those seem to be different considerations, and I'm wondering if you think that essential element is the same in both of those contexts.
There are different considerations involved, but in terms of what consists of an essential element, you look at the case law, and the courts are using the same definition in both contexts.
Do you know what that definition is?
Again, I paraphrased it today, and I don't have it. I don't have the verbatim language that's being used.
I'm
not
sure
my paraphrase is accurate, but I mean, State v. Johnson, for example, is a case that. It's recited throughout the case law, and some of the language that's used is that whether it's a necessary ingredient of the crime, actus reus, mens rea, necessary ingredient of the crime, without which the state cannot convict. And that's where it's going to. And under that standard definition, that standard meaning, knowledge that the restraint was without legal authority falls comfortably within that essential element.
Let me just clarify what I think you're saying. The definition of what restraint was included in an instruction. It just happened not to be the to convict. Is that a fair statement?
It's not a complete statement, but it's getting there. It wasn't included in the to convict. There was an abduct instruction defining abduction. There was an instruction defining restraint, but no instruction tells the jury that what the state needed to prove, in addition to anything else, was that Mr. Saunders knew that the restraint was he was without legal authority. And that's why the conviction should be reversed.
Thank you.